Are you a consultant or dreaming of the day that you make the transition to one? Then you're in the right place. Hello, and welcome to the Global Consultant Podcast, where we introduce you to the life of a consultant and what it takes to make it in the consulting business. In each episode, we will present you with challenges faced, lessons learned, and aspirations realized. By listening, we hope to help coach you as you may consider a life of consulting with its many trials and benefits. Oxford Global Resources specializes in finding the best consultants in engineering, life sciences, information technology, lab services, and healthcare. And we're here to offer tips on how to get started if you've made the choice to transition from employee to consultant and how to navigate those obstacles along the way. Let's begin.
Hello, Robbie, and welcome to the Global Consultant Podcast. We are excited to have you.
Likewise, glad to some of the inner mechanics with my colleagues and help them clear the mindset and be on the right path.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you could just introduce yourself, talk about what type of consultant you are and how long you've been consulting.
Sure. So my name is Robbie Singh. I've been consulting for a long, long, long time. Part of the reason is I'm workaholic and I like challenges, let's put it that way. I'm very restrictive, but at the same time, I'm friendly. So people get this misconception that just because they talk to me, they know me. That's not the case. But then at the end of the day, you know, what we achieve is to take a leap forward, jump into the next level of technology. So if we look at our history, you know, the major progress was during the time when most of us were in stress of some sort or in a worry of some sort. And the moment we take our foot off the gas, then the reality is that, we go into laid back mode. One of the best examples can be if we start discussing about when was the last time we sent a man on moon. And what have we done now? Because if we look at the graph, we can say that, yes, if this was done at that time, by now, we should be on Mars. And here we are looking at the cost and kind of sort of never invested our time into that arena. Now, space industry in general is expanding at around 3 to 4%. But because of space industry, we got the microprocessor and the computers and other industry, which is growing at 400%. Most of us forgot that if we invest our time over there, how it's going to benefit us with other industries. We just dropped that and we shifted. And what I have seen in my consulting arena, that organizations in general would go in a little bit of laid back attitude. And when they see something and they get excited, they want someone to do it with the experience without having proper understanding of what are the ramifications. So again, it brings down to, if you're looking for those opportunities, for those challenging roles, the areas where you can make a difference, you're not gonna get often in a full-time position role. And one of the best things I can define working internationally is that here in the United States, ordinary people do extraordinary work on daily basis. And out of that extraordinary work, if the expectation is that everyone should be Edison, that's not going to happen. Everybody's going to be Nikola Tesla. That's not going to happen. So some of us take that leap risk. And, you know, when we go on site with the client, we make that difference.
Right. So can you talk a little bit about your progression as a consultant? So, you know, when you started and kind of where you are now?
Certainly.
I'm sure it's been a long road and you've progressed a ton.
Yes. I started as I used to be an engineer, and I used to be with the Microsoft Disaster Recovery Support. So if you you got a server and that server is giving you blue screen or it's not booting up properly for production environment for the user to log in, those cases would come to me. So right. I used to deal with that. And one of the things I learned is no matter how expensive the ticket is, right? If a customer is paying $300 or they are under Microsoft blanket or they are paying $5,000 for a ticket, if you tell customer, I cannot help you, that customer is gone, period. So it doesn't matter if you return the money to them. What the customer is looking for is a solution. And my job was, no matter what happens, I would work with the developers, I would guide the customer what are the right ways, but we will provide them a solution. So that way, you know, we still maintained a relationship and the customer trusts that. So then I started from there, you know, friends to friends, I came to know about a position for disaster recovery. And the logic was simple, that certain business wanted to make sure that they give insurance to their investors, stating that nothing is going to happen to critical business services, and that would add their stock value and insurance value. And for that, they had to build an alternate data center, probably, you know, 500 to 700 miles away. And that initiative came to me, and I helped them put that together. And that was the first time when I realized that the project managers are very good project managers with the political language. But what's happening under the hood, they had no idea. They would not understand. But moreover, the logic was, don't come to me with a problem, come to me with a solution. And to me, it was like, hey, if I have to build a solution and I know how to talk to my customers, why do I need you? I think I'll do a better job than you. And that is how I went into that project management role. And till today, I'm working as a program manager. Now I have project managers who work under me. I have business analysts who work under me. I work with the engineers. I work with developers, you name it. I work with them and I do talk to business as well. And part of my job is to make sure I understand the problems that are being brought to me by my engineers, by my developers, and I do help them solve that problem, but at the same time, I translate that into plain English so that my leadership can understand, and we try to keep it as simple as possible and achieve the objective before the committed or the promised time. So that's how that started, and I still enjoy myself.
Yeah, so it sounds like consulting for you was kind of really the only choice. I mean, full-time wasn't a full-time position, probably wouldn't have fulfilled what you were looking to do in not only your career, but your life.
Well, yes. What happens is when the management, B, C, or D management, or your managers, or the engineers, when they look at you, they don't see problem solving. They see an opportunity where on your shoulders they can take risks. Right. I'll give you a very simple example and a true example. I was working for one of my client and I was supposed to be there to, you know, do their look at their environment, do the cleanup, do the standardization simplification. So if today they are using 5 servers, tomorrow can they use only 2? Or, you know, is this application even needed? Can this component be added into another application? And all of a sudden, we started, or the business looked for an opportunity and took a risk or a bet, where I don't think they could do that with their full-time employees, was being in California, we have to preserve water, we have to save water. And in order to do that, we have to make sure that we invest on trees and not cut the trees down. So how can we do it? And if that kind of challenge comes to my desk, what can I do to make that kind of a difference? Now, if you ask this question to a full-time employee, most probably he's going to say, hey, I'm supposed to work 40 hours. I'm burning 50 hours. I'm not interested in this because I'm not getting anything out of it, right? Or someone may say, yes, I'll do it, but I have to think about it and I have to think out of the box. And I have other problems to deal with and I don't have time. Or if there is time, now they have to do research and figure it out. At the same time, their bosses are hammering on the day-to-day activities. Versus management would ask a guy like me, and I'll be like, opportunity, and I'll be like, I can make a difference. So when something like this came to my table as a one-liner, I looked at how we can reduce the number of prints. And we created a solution all by ourselves wherein we identify not what you are printing, because that is something that goes against the privacy, but the number of pages you are printing. And if I know that you as an individual is printing, let's say 500 pages a day, and you're not even doing double-sided, now you are consuming a lot of paper and utilization of the print, the multi-printing equipment. But at the same time, is that what you need, right? And there is a very thin line between need and want. And most of us, even when we go on our online shopping, we just say, I just need it, rather, you know, this is my
I want it tomorrow. Overnight.
Right. No, I need, you know, overnight. So, right. Or yes, it's available. I'll go to store and pick it up right now.
Yeah.
So we looked at it and we said, how about this? We are not going to stop anyone from printing, right? Just like the way we have this today, that we, in excitement, send a message and 5 seconds later, or sometimes even 2 seconds later, regret that, can I cancel it? Can I edit it, right? So similarly, the solution that I proposed was, we don't care what you print, but we do care how many sheets you are printing. And you want to give the print command as many times as you want to, no problem. But we attached what we call your access badge, and we connected that with the printer. So that you would go to the printer, you have to hoover your badge, and then it would say, yes, I want to print it. So this way, you do get that downtime where you can think whether you need it or not.
Consciously think if you actually want it.
Yes.
Or and need it.
Yes, that's very true. And what we found was there were certain floors in the building where they were printing like for free, right?
Right.
And using it. And then there were others who were not even printing much. So when this solution was put in place, we were able to reduce the printing by 65 to 70%. So when this number goes back to your dashboard or when it goes back to the marketing team, of course, they all feel pleased. But these are some of the crazy opportunities that were brought to my table just for the very reason that I was enjoying what I was doing. And I took it as a challenge and said, sure, no problem. One of the other interesting fact was, and I was not even interested in this, there was this opportunity and the client was sitting in Kansas. If I go more specific, you would know who the client is because it's right. But they said, you know, just go on a call, have a discussion with them. And what I found was, the team of 5 people on a call trying to convince me that their database end of life cleanup is going to take them 3 years and they got budget for 3 years. And I am thinking 3 years for a database cleanup. If I look at 400% progress in the information technology and you just consumed 3 years, I mean, today when we look at every year we get a new Apple product, every year we get a new Samsung product.
Right. What,
by the time your 3 years are done, you're back to square one.
Yeah.
Definitely something wrong. And then I could not register that a simplification or a standardization program would take that long. So I said, you know what? I'm going to take this challenge. I want to see how you are doing, because obviously you're doing it the wrong way. I guarantee you. And behold, you know, 8-9 months later, it was all done.
And I'm sure that went over well with some and not over well with others.
Well, no, they were having a wrong approach. You know, a very common sense. If you know, you are in the middle of nowhere, you are doing an extraordinary job, and without understanding full variables, you are doing the best you can. So if you got a problem and you are thinking from a manufacturing viewpoint, right? You got a product which is ready, and before the product is ready, you go to manufacturer, and manufacturer has to fix it, right? So the same way, the managers would go to the software developers. What kind of issues you get? And the software developers would get, not much, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. And when I'm doing this, I have other activities and it's going to take me X, Y, Z time. And based on that, they were putting it together. And that was the problem. Because when I look at the infrastructure library or the ITIL, this is not going to fly. Because in infrastructure, you don't go to developers, you go to the operations and ask them what kind of problems they are getting on a day-to-day basis. You don't go to an application developer. You actually look at your business model, my logistics, what applications are you impacted by, marketing, what applications are you impacted by? And based on that, you set the priority because now you have business impact list. Once you got that, you start with divide and conquer, and before you know, it's done. Now, what I did, I just took that and I want to prove a point, and I went there having my own logistic issues. And I can tell you, Kansas is more expensive than New York, but it was one of those things that, you know, I made friends and surely proved my point and made a difference. And I feel really happy about it. As a full-time employee, was I able to achieve anything like that? The answer is no. But as a consultant, going through a whole different breed of market and problem solving, I was able to do it. So those are some of the areas where I could see this kind of an adventure. And moreover, I learned how it is to live in Kansas. And I also learned one should not be scared of the tornadoes anymore. Which earlier it was like, oh my God, we are getting a tornado. And then it was like, yeah, right, it's not going to come here. So, you know, it takes you a whole different course of life. But yes, I'm very thankful to that opportunity, because that opportunity gave me a vacation, and the nearest place to see was Colorado. And I guess, you know, right
then
and there,
you are now.
I'm going to Colorado. So yeah. that made that significant change. Now, if I would have just ignored that opportunity, I can tell you I would have not been in Colorado. So that's how I take it. So everything happened for the right reasons.
Yeah, I'd say so. It just sounds like you are also able to do things at a much quicker speed because you're not, I mean, I can't speak for you, but you're not as afraid to fail.
Well, you see, it's a very interesting key point. You see, I am not interested in going into Silicon Valley.
Right.
And part of the reason is my colleagues who've been there within 5 to 7 years, they all took retirement. I am not ready for that. But moreover, in that wonderland, they don't hire people based on your success. They hire you based on how many failures have you been to. So when you go over there and you say, you know, I know 500 ways how you're going to fail, just like Thomas Edison, they'll hire you. And they'll ask you the questions in a very interesting manner. They'll ask you that, you know, how many times have you, you know, seen success? And boy, if you say every single time, they know right then and there you are not going to be helpful, because you come over here and you see failures, then they lose money. Right. And everything is super expensive. So when I would look for my team members, I would ask them, you know, when you are working on a project or an initiative, how many times you had to capture a risk? Number of times. How many issues? Not many. Okay, how many times the project was in red? Oh, never. It was always green. I'm like, no. If you were telling me your project was in green all the time, we got a serious problem. Because, you know, planets are not aligned all the time. And right. if there are no problems, then we got a bigger problem to look at. So I would look at it from a viewpoint of what can I do in the most shortest time with minimum effort. In the consulting business, I would define it, what looks a straight walk in the park is actually one of the most cunning traps what people usually ignore. So, you know, the maze to the destination is what I would put it as. So if we look at it, can you make changes during the holiday season? The answer is no. So obviously, you know, November, December are gone. Can you ask somebody to start working on an initiative starting January 2nd? The answer is no. People come back and by January 15th or 20th, they are back in their motion. So technically, when you are building your roadmap, assume second week of November to third week of January, nothing is happening. Similarly, in the month of July, not much of the things are going to happen. So now you are left with a very small window. Out of that, now you look at, you know, what, where are the pitfalls or how the application team is working on certain things. And boy, if they are working on agile with the software development, you are doomed. Because anytime they start with something as, oh, yes, it's just one code, it's going to land up with 4 months of effort. And I have seen it numerous times wherein people would do this. And your 6 months of project is now, you know, 4 years down the line and you're still developing something. And that is crazy, but that's how some people do their survival. So my job is to make sure that I design it, the solutioning, in a manner that it's quick, it's short and sweet, and I'm able to give the money back to the program. And that's usually what I do. I would start with a bigger umbrella. I would ask my VP or the CFO saying, you know, give me a larger budget. And anyone with a small issue comes back and they say, oh, we cannot do this and we need budget. And now this is going to be next year. I'm like, don't worry about it. Just put it on my account under my program. I'll take care of it. Start with the development, get it done. And that's usually how I would drive to get these things done sooner than later. And the other part is, if I relocate and I don't like that city for various reasons, then I need to get that project done faster so I can get out of there.
The motivation you need.
Yes, yes. And then, you know, if there are other areas where I like it and I need to stick around, then I really need to understand what ticks with that company so I get more and more projects and I can stay there. And that also keeps my bosses on a tight leash, that they have to make sure that they keep up to my standards, because if they don't, I move on. These are some of the things where, you know, it's like a dance. It's a two-way street.
It's got to be a good fit.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Do you think not just your personality, but do you think personality has a lot to do with being a consultant? Do you need a specific personality, or can you speak to that a little bit?
Certainly. So, well, yes, personality plays a very important role. I've been through certain positions wherein people work with an attitude and they think their way is the right way. And because they are there for such a long time, nobody can argue with them. And you need to understand and work with those individuals in a manner that they are getting along and you achieve the objective. If you are someone who is not going to have the right personality, have the right attitude towards it, you're not going to stay there for long. I've seen that wherein it's a true story. I joined a client and I went there and they had the full-time employees and then they had the outsourced people. And their mindset was that the outsourcing people would do everything and they would be the managers, even though they are not the managers, they are the software engineers. So they would say, we are engineers, but we don't do any work. And it took me a little bit of time to understand what is the right meaning. So they would do the decision making and they would not do the actual work. And I had to sit with them individually because there was someone who came into my meeting with 25 to 28 people in there and straight away bluntly said, I'm not going to do it. And I saw a rebellion. And apparently I had ear to ear smiles because I was like, that's interesting. So I said, I agree. And I said, okay, you don't want to work. Okay, give me the key points. Because, you know, to me, it was the most sensible thing in general, what people would do in such circumstances. Oh my God, I got too many people. Let's, you know, have a 101. Before I could start the 101, to me, it was, you know, you are a rebellion and you want to show everybody that you got the power and you are a full-time employee. So I said, okay, you know, those were the good old days before the pandemic. So I said, we got a whiteboard marker. We got the whiteboard. Let's have the marker and, you know, start with the points. Why you are not going to do it? I don't want to know, you know, the other side. I want to know, you said no. What is the reasoning behind it? And once I got the point, I said, fair enough. Now I'll work with it. And how about if I work on most of these points for you, then will you work? And the answer was maybe. And I was like, okay, I see light on the other side of the tunnel.
Better than no.
Yeah, it changed. So then I had a 101 with that individual. And, you know, from there, I started. And surprisingly, I fulfilled 90% of those points. And not just that individual, but the other team was like, you know, don't go into his meeting and say no, because he will ask for questions. And if you got an attitude, you got a problem. And if you are genuine, just connect with him on personal level and things will be done. And I can tell you, if you don't have the right mindset, the first thing what most of the individuals would do is start with escalation. And the thing is, what is an escalation going to do? I can give you another example wherein a vendor bluntly told me, I'm not going to do it. And I was like, a vendor is telling me that is absolutely new. And I said, okay, why? Isn't that in your contract? And then I looked at the contract and apparently somebody played with the English words and left the contract very vague. So they had too many opportunities to take more money. So I was like, okay, and I got in touch with my legal team. And some of the things what they were doing wrong were at a very crazy level. But then again, you know, it's very important that you do the right things the right way. And I brought them on the table. I said, look, you guys are telling me you're not going to do it, but your contract says that you are supposed to do this. And for everything, they would say, this is extra. I'm like, okay, then let's rebase the contract and say, what exactly are you going to do in the contract? And then everything else is going to be extra. And then they had a tight lip because now they cannot fiddle with it. And one of the things I learned back in the day was that you just don't get these contracts in English. You also get them in French and Spanish.
Right. So
this way, the contract cannot get that room of error where, you know, some of the individuals become so smart that they say, oh, by the way, this over here doesn't mean this, it means this. Yeah, when it is in French and Spanish, you can't do that anymore.
Yeah,
so
it's true.
Yeah. So I got that piece ironed out. And then, you know, rather than kicking out the vendor, it took me around 2 months to get this thing ironed out. But then vendor had no other option. They had to deliver. And the first thing they tried to do was, you know, replace the current project manager. And I was like, what's that going to do? No, 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 we need to start all over again. I was like, yeah, right. But I invested my time with that with that individual. So let's continue. And, you know, we'll get it done. So again, if you are not having the right personality or the right mindset, you won't be able to handle these challenges. And you might be looking at other opportunities. The other thing is that companies do say they have processes, and they will say that they are following certain ISO or certain methodologies, but inside it's all the same. I've seen it multiple times. And in one of the organizations, I was told to run a project based on JIRA. I'm like, why do you want? Yes, it's possible, but would you like to go to the office in a Ferrari 2 miles away rather than walking or even, you know, taking a regular vehicle? You can go in a Ferrari. That's no, it's not that it's impossible. It's possible. Is it worth? So if today somebody asks me, and this is one of the questions that I've been asked, you know, multiple times, can you run this project in JIRA? And I immediately understand how their inner mechanics are, how the managers are working with the resources versus how they want to achieve the objective. So it's a weak matrix where the manager wants to have full control over his resources and want to understand step by step what my resource is doing. Micromanagement. Right. But the bigger challenge is if a task is taking 1 hour to complete, then you do it in JIRA as a project, it takes you 4 hours to complete. I know it. And now if I go back to a business and business asks me, we follow JIRA methodology and we do this and this. And right at the initial call, I'm like, then how are you solving this problem? And they are like, no, we are not. And I immediately know that they started this to please their bosses, but they are not able to achieve the objectives. And at the end of the day, they are burning more money than what they are supposed to. So I would go into certain environments and I would say, wait a second, let's do this. We build a process, you follow the process. Once you follow the process, everything just works. And then nobody looks at whether you are following JIRA, whether you're following Microsoft Project Plan, because at the end of the day, they want to see the objective. Plus they want to see the documentation. It's just that they are using the wrong tools to achieve an objective, which can be achieved in a better manner. I'm not saying to cut the corners, but I intend to give them the right tools, which solves the purpose of what they are trying to achieve. At the same time, achieve the objective in a given or in an earlier time slot.
Yeah. Do you think that the clients that you've worked for keep those processes after you leave, or they go back to what they were before?
Excellent question. They not only use it, they still use it. In this arena, I made so many friends that even after 10 years, someone is still using my... So back in the day, I created... I was doing the end of life, and in order to make sure that there is a full visual look of how the entire system is working, I took advantage of their big plotter and I printed it. And they had a blank wall. I stick that entire thing on that wall. Apparently, even after 10 years, they are using the same system. I know it because somebody called me and said, you know, where did you get those images? And I was like, I put them in Visio and I built them from the ground up. I gave you guys the files. So apparently their guys were not well versed how to work with an imaging tool, how you have things in layer and you stick them up and group them together. And the Visio files are there. But they asked me and I'm like, you are still using that process? I mean, you know, I upgraded myself to a further version of that. And if you're still using that old process, do you know that what I created at that time, if you ask me today, I can actually do it in 3 steps with what I created for you with 7 steps. So they are still using 7 steps. And wow. Yeah, that is something why I can say that most of us would like to follow the rules on the road. And every now and then we see someone who is a rebellion and we feel happy. And at the same time, we see what's going to be the consequence of it, right? YouTube is full of it when we see the disasters, or, you know, we just search for it and say, oh, this is what's going to happen, and or how this is done. But very few of us actually pave that road with the full engineering and with the markings, and then, you know, run a study as to how the traffic is moving and what are the traps we need to set, right? That's how the red light cameras came into picture. That's how our speed limit came into picture. If you, right. If you look back, you know, 1960s, what was the speed limit? I don't know. You could just hit the gas and go. Or, you know, what was the safety measure? Were you wearing a seatbelt? Oh, what? No, in those cars, there was no seatbelt. Now, of course, things have changed. You could have your, you know, 5-year-old sitting in the front. But now you can't. Well, you can, you should not. And those are some of the things wherein my role is in an area wherein I build that infrastructure, I build those roads, I build those policies which help others. One of the best examples I can give is, how many times have we dealt with passwords? It's frustrating. Our accounts get logged, and I have literally seen organizations where they literally print the username and password on the machine, on the keyboard, so that way we don't have to enter it. So the entire purpose of username and password was demolished because it's annoying. Right. So you start to look at, what do we need to do to solve it, right? You can't just, you know, leave it with inconvenience, because people will find solutions and people will find workarounds like crazy. So the moment you start with something like that, it changes how the industry works. So, you know, we say, and I play practical joke every now and then, specifically when I travel, I would ask the passenger sitting next to me, oh, would you like to have Mentos? And they'll just take one and say thanks and just, you know, put it in their mouth. And then I stare at them and they are like, what? It's like, do you know me? And all of a sudden, their alarm triggers. Yeah, you were a stranger and I just took a candy from you. So, you know, that's something that, how our environment is, how our society is, we often forget these basic rules. And it's important that we not only put these rules in place, but we also make sure that there are checks and balances so everybody stays on the right side and we do the right things the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are crazy examples, I would say. But obviously something that everybody can relate to. So that's cool. I know we've talked about a lot of your exciting and, you know, evolving projects, but are there any other you'd want to speak on a little bit?
Well, I already shared few, all the way from the one in Kansas, or the one where, you know, I went to how we can save the trees. And to be honest, you know, if I tell someone that I'm IT infrastructure and I've worked on an initiative where we were saving the trees, they'll be like, you might not be an engineer. Yeah. But then there are ways, you know, how you do it. Or you look at a problem, you look around yourself, or you look around the people around you, and you see how you need to solve that problem. Right. That is one key factor. It's there, it's around us, but only few of us will get that kind of opportunity where we see it in plain sight and we take advantage of it. Yeah. You and I, you know, honestly, we both use Wi-Fi. I mean, if I tell you, no, we are not using Wi-Fi, you'll be like, no, we use it. We need it. I go to Starbucks. The first thing I look for is Wi-Fi before even I order a coffee or tea. So if you're using Wi-Fi, then why we haven't started using it with our electric cables, right? Why my house needs electric wiring? Why can't that be on Wi-Fi? They are both coming from Tesla's principles, right? So we look at that and we look at how we can solve it. It's possible. What is the cost to solve it? How we can solve it in a most economical manner. In my books, even though we are on a recorded line, my personal viewpoint is Elon Musk is not a genius, but he bumped up with people who were genius in a way. He's a businessman and he encashed that. So I do not know if you know about this, but there was two crazy guys who decided, you know, we got so many laptop batteries. Can we put these batteries together and run a car? And they started a company called T-Zero, which Elon Musk bought. And then he changed it to Tesla. And, you know, that's what they started doing. And even though, you know, they did that and he learned the hard way because there were people who would take his plans and, you know, run it in a different way. And then they learned the hard way from Apple that they need to patent their research. And that's how we got a Tesla car. What everybody was saying, nope, it's a battery powered car. It's not going to fly. It's not going to work. And it's there. It's there among us today. And if we look at it, when Thomas Edison, as well as Nikola Tesla were there, weren't they able to do it? They were. But why they did not? And this is where the smart business plan from Elon Musk comes into play. So there are these two guys who came up with this creative idea to run a car from a laptop battery. And then Elon Musk looked at it and said, how I can reduce a cost, how I can deal with the labor laws, or how I can deal with the unions and work on this and reduce my cost. That's why you see that he got those robots who are putting the car together. And then he, you know, run the manufacturing. And of course, you know, when time is on your side, all of a sudden you become the richest man. But in reality, that's how it is. I'm not interested to be like someone who wants to make money. And the purpose is by all means money. For me, it's more like how we can do something which is going to make everybody's life better, simplified, and, you know, take them to a whole different level. If you go back to 2007, when Steve Jobs introduced the iPhone, any other phone in the market would come with the physical keyboard. Some of them would come with the camera. And look at it today. Everybody went back to drawing board. Today, if you want to get a plain, basic phone with no camera, you're not going to get it. Everybody's building smartphone and only smartphone. So made a big difference and, you know, changed how we live our lives today. Good or bad, that's a whole different discussion. But yes, it all starts when people like us get an opportunity or we are around those people who give us that opportunity, looking at it, how they can make more money or how we can make a difference and, you know, be in that unique position. So if you don't have the right personality, if you don't have the right stars, if you don't have the right opportunity, all this means nothing. Right. But when right people with the right mindset during the right time connect, then yes, we are able to make a difference.
Yeah. Like you said earlier, everything happens for a reason.
Indeed.
Stars align. Okay, this is just one question I always like to end on. Sure. What advice do you have for somebody just looking to get into consulting or newly in consulting?
I would say definitely, if you don't know which is the best option for you, definitely start as a consultant. See the life, see the adventures. And that way you can make a decision if you like the town, if you like the people you are working with, and you no longer like the push or the adventurous skill set, then, you know, settle down. Otherwise, stay being the Indiana Jones and continue your life that way.
I think that's great advice.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for doing this today. I think you have just a great career that you've built. And it's just so interesting hearing, you know, all the different facets of life that you've you know, been able to be a part of just within your career?
Thank you. I just enjoy myself. I don't care about the money. I'm not doing this for the wallet. I'll be very honest. If this was that, I'm doing this because I can burn 50, 60 hours and I can charge for that, I would not be doing this. And to be honest, whenever I had been working on all my projects, I straight away flat charge 40 hours. I don't charge 50, 60 hours, even though I work that many hours. But then I have seen my clients understanding that. And this is something wherein everybody sees it. Nobody would see anything about it, but they understand and they give you the benefits, the respect beyond than anybody else. For example, they'll tell me, you can work only 4 days a week, or, you should take a vacation. Don't worry about it. Or, there is July 4th holiday. You just go flat. That's okay. And you start to see a care coming from a manager to a consultant, which you would not see if you are, being in that self-centered personality. Hey, I work 50 hours. I charge 50 hours. Not my concern, whether it's success or not. If you are keeping that mindset, you know what? I'm able to pay my bills. I'm going to do 40. And at the same time, I'm going to make this difference. And there is a success, what everybody can see. You will see that, people treat you in a very different way rather than, you are just a consultant. So this is my way how I had been working. And again, it's a very good start point to dip your feet, see how the world is, as not as per the books, but as per the reality. And once you see it, then one should make a decision whether they want to be onto the adventurous bandwagon, or they are like, hey, I'm happy with it and I want to, settle down here and just leave the train.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Again, very interesting. You have a very interesting life, and it's. I'm sure a lot of people will love to hear about that. So
there are pros and cons everywhere. So.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I have Sheldon in me, so
yeah,
keeps me running.
Well, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning into our episode. Don't forget to subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. We look forward to the next episode, but in the meantime, if you're interested in starting your role in consulting with Oxford Global Resources, contact us at www.oxfordcorp.com. That's OXFORDCORP.com, and head to our careers page. You can also find us on LinkedIn by searching Oxford Global Resources. We'll catch you on the next episode.